All right. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, everybody in the city of Tucson. Wake up. Wake up. I know it's early Saturday morning and you got sleep in your eyes and you hung out late Friday night. But guess what? It's time for the Fresh Start Show with Dr. Holt. Let's go. Let's go. Get your Wheaties. Get your Corn Flakes, your Raisin Bran, your Apple Jacks and your Fruit Loops. Cream of wheat. Malt meal and oatmeal, whatever it is, your bagel, your whatever you like to eat and drink. Let's go. It's get up in this morning. It's time for the Fresh Start Show with Dr. Holt, my co-host with Tom Cortez is with me today. But guess what? We got special guests. We got the chief of police of the city of Tucson with me. Once again, Chad Kazmar, one of the hardest working chiefs in our county and in our city. And we're so excited to have this brother with us. And his public information officer is also with us. Rick is with us. And so we're looking to have a great, great, great time having some serious conversations because they're special guests. I'm not taking a whole lot of time. I want our most of our time go to our guests. We know in light of just a few weeks ago of the tragedy of the death of Tyree Nichols dying at the hands of law enforcement. We know our nation, our country is concerned and far as more deaths at the hand of police officers, in particular men of color at the hands of police officers. So we have to have those brave conversations. You guys know how we do it at Fresh Start. We don't shun from tough conversations. I believe that if you can't conquer it, if you can't confront it, you can't conquer it. So we have to have those brave conversations. And so our chief is with us on today, and we're so happy to have him as he take out of his busy schedule to come and visit the Fresh Start Show. Our show is about justice reform. Our show is about talking about the struggles of those who've been incarcerated and those who's coming out of prison trying to rebrand and restart their life. This is what our show is about. And so we are always excited to have members of our law enforcement community, our judicial branch, our judges, our prosecutors to come and have conversations about progress, about process, about issues that we can do to improve our justice system. So we're excited here today. So welcome, Chief. What's going on, my friend?
Good morning, Tucson, and good morning, Pastor Holt.
So, in light of everything that's been going on, you know, we're just going to jump right in. You saw that Memphis had a horrible tragedy. Once again, a young man loses his life to the hands of police department or police officers. And I always like to say at the beginning that we can't let bad apples drive the narrative on what everyday men and women in uniform do as they go out to protect and serve and be the guardians of their community every single day. But you know, we can do 99 great things and that one thing happened.
Absolutely.
So as the chief of police, let's talk about it. What were your thoughts when you saw that come out, protocol, best practices in that light of in law enforcement? I'm sure as the chief, you can speak into some of that.
Absolutely. So I want to commend the Memphis chief and really their body of leadership for quickly getting their hands wrapped around this, being transparent about it, notifying the community that the investigation was ongoing. They acted swiftly. You have to balance that with due process for investigations, both an administrative component and a criminal investigation. And if you want ultimately, you know, officers to be held accountable for both of those things, it does take a little bit of time. And I also want to commend the fact that they messaged out knowing that it had the potential to impact the entire country, that through the Major City Chiefs Association, which we're part of, there's 18,000 police departments in this country. There's 70 major city police departments, and Tucson PD is one of those. That's the 33rd largest city in the country. And they messaged to us and said, hey, we've got a national level case. It's horrific and you're going to be impacted by it. And they made sure that we had the briefing. So it was much better. We did discuss this actually a week and a half ago. I was in Washington, D.C. at a major city chief conference. Memphis had a commander at that and opened up with taking full ownership of just what the, you know, the horrific actions that we all watched on TV. And so we're all left with a disappointment. You opened with it. It's so extremely difficult in this field right now in my profession to gain forward progress and build relationships. And even though it's in Memphis, it absolutely impacts here us here in Tucson. And so that's why, you know, I got out quickly in front of it once I was able to watch the video with media and released a community statement. And then I also followed that up with an internal statement to our own staff and talking about how this act won't define us, but how it does yes. set us back and what things that we've done to prevent something like this from happening here in Tucson.
Wow. And so going into looking deeper into that, it's always easy to quarterback a game on Monday night, right? But if we were to quarterback it a day after, going back for learning purposes,
sure.
What do you think from a, you're a long-term, super long-term law enforcement officer and went through the ranks from obviously patrol through probably almost every department and Tucson Police Department and frontline supervisor, commander, all of that. What was your perspective far as what do you think went wrong far as with one supervisory practices of training? What did you catch that was like, man?
So the first thing I thought of is, you know, going into my 23rd year as in this profession, and that includes a year in 2021 of being the interim director at the 911 center, was first, you know, how do we recruit these individuals? What are their recruiting practices? How do we train them? What did their background process look like? Where was their first line supervisor? What type of use of force policy did they have? They had body more cameras on. So for these individuals to feel like they could act this way with cameras, I had a million questions.
Yeah.
And of course it was a specialized unit too,
yeah.
as referred to the Scorpion unit. And frankly, what that means is a proactive unit. What appears to their task was to saturate specific parts of town of Memphis that either had violent crime issues or narcotics issues. But I'm curious, what were their operating procedures? What were their measures of success? How was community engaged and involved in those types of conversations? What are their crime strategies in Memphis? So all these different questions. And again, as a chief, how do we prevent something like that from happening here? How do I go to bed at night knowing that this big machine, the Tucson Police Department, runs 24/7, and I can't be up every night, all night, every day, right? And I depend on my first line supervisors. I depend on the quality of backgrounding and training and peer accountability. And so that's really, you know, that was my initial response. And being, you know, emotionally impacted, you know, my wife and I stayed up to almost midnight crafting a message, not only to the community, but to my staff, because it's just heartbreaking. It's such a setback. I apologize to the Memphis community and the Nichols family. And I mean, just such a preventable tragic loss. On a bunch of different angles.
We talked last week about my dad being a police officer for 28 years, and policemen go on their shift and they live at a level of hypervigilance and during their shifts, especially when they're going through periods into these neighborhoods where yeah. high crime, high drugs, and high chance of violence occurring. My whole question is of course going back to the mental health of the officers, and especially in units like that, do they have a release from going through these periods of hypervigilance, a 40-hour period of serving in the public eye, and in these periods, where do they go from there, and do they just go home, and can we do more?
We absolutely, great question, and we can do more. So one of the things that we have to think about as a country, and whether it's in addressing gun crime, which is up throughout the country, it's up in our own community. We had 870 non-fatal gun incidents last year. We had 67 homicides and 75 incidents. Mm. Our officers deployed battle-type individual first aid kits that are for field trauma developed from war. Over 100 times to save community members, and even recently, within last week, one of our own officers who was tragically struck by a drunk driver while investigating a pedestrian fatality. So you're spot on. So what we focused on last year was a couple things. One, we needed to invest. Innovation isn't free, And we had to recognize that our field personnel, our field public safety, and frankly, even to some extent, our emergency communication partners who might not be out there touching it and feeling it, but our 911 call takers and dispatchers who are at the tip of the response model. And it goes all the way even to our record staff who have to watch body, you know, very graphic body worn camera footage. We didn't think about that 10 years ago when body worn camera footage rolled out. So we really invested by restructuring the department and putting a full chain of command, a full division of resources around wellness, and both that be physical and mental health. And the reason behind that was we recognized these officers are going out and being exposed to trauma every night. Mm-hmm. And when you don't unpack those experiences, there's a callousing that happens for folks to survive, to go back to that next shift. And then we start coping with alcohol. Well, you know, 2021 into 22, we had 21, we had two on-duty, not on-duty, but two active duty members die by suicide. In 2022, under my watch, we had a retired member who was a close personal friend of mine in a quasi-police, you know, capacity for Raytheon, die by suicide. And we were already had the ball rolling, but it really reinforced to me, man, we have failed our profession. And then, of course, the consternation, almost 9 years. This August will be 9 years from Ferguson. So recognizing if we want our officers to take care of the community and treat and see human beings as human beings, you got to unpack these experiences. And so we've done a much better job of that. So we have mandatory checks that occur if a team member is involved in a critical incident, but we now do proactive engagement with expanded wellness resources to check in on folks. And really, we also got a professional partner, which is Boulder Crest, a company called Boulder Crest, which was developed 14 years ago, primarily for wounded veterans coming back. And they had at the time a program called Warrior Path, which is a live-in five-day program and a foundation of his post-traumatic growth, that you don't have to live through experiences of service to military or through being a police officer, first responder. You don't have to live. You are going to be exposed to things that are going to give, you know, add to your trauma plate. Yeah. And we all come to these jobs with trauma, right? Yeah. We're all human beings, divorced families, you know, products of living with parents who are alcoholics. So anyhow, it's a really complex thing. What I like to, I'll just close that thought with, if you defer maintenance on your vehicle or your house for 10 or 15 years, it takes a much steeper arc of a financial and time investment to get you caught up to a maintenance phase. And that's really where we're at as an organization. We're recognizing we've got to catch up on the folks that have been doing this for a while. And at the same time, we've put 85% of our Struggle Well program, which is a week-long program that we just are wrapping up today in our 13th class of 25 team members that go through that program to help them with all the things that we're talking about. But you know, it's this investment, it's continued investment, and not letting our foot off the gas pedal here if we want different returns.
Oh, awesome. Well, we got your public information officer with us on today, Rick. We don't want to leave him out. And so, Rick, man, welcome to the Fresh Start Show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your role. Why is it important to have a public information officer? And if we have something to jump off, what is your role and how do you tackle that as the public information guy?
Yeah, so a little bit about my role. It's something that I never thought I'd be in. Coming to this job, I got a little over 15 years on, going on my 16th year, but I am grateful for this position. Because much like our department, I echo the transparency aspect of this. I believe being transparent and being able to give out information for some of these critical incidents that occur, whether it be officer-involved shootings, whether it be injuries of officers, or just things that affect our community. I think being able to contact and connect with our community to give them that information and as much information as we possibly can, it's important. We want to work with our community to get better, to make Tucson better overall. So for me, being tasked and being given that job, connection with the chief here too, and being able to echo a lot of his messages to our community, it's important. I take pride in it. So
awesome. So we know that you've been having an issue getting more officers on the team. You got more officers retiring and leaving and trying to replace that to get us just at basic level to be able to handle 911 calls and have a better response time. So I'm sure people in the committee want to know, Are you hiring? Are you looking for more officers?
Year round we're hiring. So join TucsonPD.org. I have that memorized. But we're not just looking for police officers. We're absolutely short. We are absolutely hiring. If you want to be a major city police officer, this is one of the finest organizations in this country. We are an industry leader in innovation and learning and preventing, trying to work to prevent things like we saw happen in Memphis. So we don't just take the work seriously here in our own community, but we take the responsibility of being a major city chief's department seriously. And so, but with that, we're expanding the way that we think about doing the job. Part of the mental health and wellness and service delivery of the community is balancing workload. While also, like you know, Dr. Holt, you just said, you know, really recognizing too, if the staff's only going to traumatic experiences, then how are we going to impact those experiences?
Yeah.
But we're expanding alternative response through not only our community service officers who we can hire straight out of high school, and they can make more than the median income in Tucson. Yes, you just heard me right. We're actually going to be increasing their responsibilities. I'm confident with that increased responsibility will come increased pay, but base pay is around $45,000 a year. We can take your child and provide them a career path. If they want to become a police officer eventually, great. If they love what they do as a professional staff team member, that's great too. And so we're going to be scaling that program by about 50 new team members a year indefinitely, as long as I can continue to get the support I've been getting from mayor and council. But we're also going to expand a professional staff investigator position this year, which means either if you have investigative experience or you're getting ready to graduate from college, we can directly hire you. We'll put you through a modified training program and effectively you'll become a detective, a professional staff detective. So we're going to look at this a couple different angles. We're also going to do hire back. So we can bring our retired team members back after 6 months separation because they have this deep, expansive knowledge and full toolbox.
Yeah.
In 9 months of training, we accomplished a lot, but I send folks out with about 5 tools in their toolbox.
Yeah.
And it takes on-the-job experience and additional annual training for me to really develop a well-rounded officer. And that takes about 3 years. So my ability to bring back some non-permanent, some part-time folks, that can help shape the future of the department all because we have such a young organization of 1,127 team members. All that plays a role in ultimately us helping create a safe community and provide high-quality service.
Wow. Tom, anything you want there?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the P&I, the community policing and what that looks like in an area. I know you're only a couple areas that you've applied it.
Yes. So one of the strategies and really where the profession's moving is evidence-led and evidence-based strategies. And what that means effectively is what you address the problem. What problem do you have? How are you trying to address that problem? Who are you going to address it with? And how are you going to track and measure whether or not that the dosage of whatever you do is actually working? And so if it's not working, you do less. If it's causing unintended harm, you do less. But if it's working, you do more in evaluating that. So really our place network investigations, we have 3 different locations. We're going into our 3rd year on that project. But really the premise of place network investigations is community safety is not just a police responsibility. We contribute to that, but it's the apartment complex owner, it's the residents that live there, it's the businesses around it, it's other city resources like our community safety, health, and wellness resources that can go in a housing first model and make sure we have affordable housing, make sure there's no food insecurities, make sure that we can get folks job opportunities. You know, one of the things we don't talk about enough is Tucson has twice the poverty rate, almost nearly twice the poverty rate of the rest of the country and the state. And poverty is a driver.
Is crazy.
Right. Yeah. And that's another one. We'll get to that. But, you know, if we're just talking about poverty, right? Poverty impacts folks trying to raise kids and, you know, that can't afford $8, you know, a dozen eggs. And so these are things that we have to continue as a city, as a metro government, as a Pima County, City of Tucson, metro government. And I think, you know, Jan Lesher and Mr. Ortega are doing a much better job as well as the mayor. And so, you know, I'm excited. You know, I'm almost 27 years of service within the city. I've never seen a metro government approach to tackling some really complex issues, which are, you brought it up, homelessness. For me, really the unsheltered population and the expansion that we've seen that's publicly visible in Tucson is driven by narcotics and specifically fentanyl. Fentanyl is the, you know, we talk about it a lot, but really most folks who are using fentanyl are also using methamphetamine. Mm-hmm. Fentanyl is different, though, and I've spent over half my career working narcotics, and what I'll tell you is you know, a decade ago, you saw people drinking 40-ounce beers. And you don't see that anymore. And you don't see it anymore because these fentanyl pills are so cheap and they've flooded the country. And because of our proximity to the border, it's an easy place to drop some off.
Yeah.
And they're just so accessible. But what I like to pull people back to is, so to address that, it's not just a housing first. It's not just a community safety, health, and wellness investment or the in the counters to the, you know, counterparts that in the county. It's also recognizing, why do we have such a demand here in the U.S. and in the city of Tucson for those drugs? So yes, we need a secure border. Yes, we need, you know, meaningful immigration reform so people can come to and from. And we got to do a better job of catching these drugs at the border. Because here's the thing, and any parent listening today, you know, if you have a child over the over 7 years of age, you need to have the talk with them. You know, one pill, one fentanyl pill can kill.
Sure.
And so there's no more pill parties. There's no more taking something you don't know what it is. And this fentanyl is absolutely deadly. And so it's a call to action. It doesn't just impact one part of town. This impacts the city of Tucson. We had, you know, over 300, just under 400 narcotics deaths last year in Pima County. A lot of those were fentanyl. Our pedestrian fatalities almost doubled. You know, I think when all of the dust settles on that, we're going to find out most of those were fentanyl, methamphetamine, alcohol related. So these are things, you know, again, that isn't just a policing problem, but it's really a community problem.
All right. You got it. This is our chief, Chad Kazmar, our police chief. Are you about a year?
14 months in 14 as a chief.
14 months, man. Look,
who's counting?
Listen, so we're so excited. We truly believe in our city that mayor and council did a great job on assigning you this task. I can't believe our relationship almost go about 10 years.
Yep.
And you can always say this. I said, when I met you, I said, you know, Chad, I think you're going to be our next chief of police when he was a captain. And this is before you had the chief, a staff role and the deputy chief.
Yep.
So maybe it was prophetic. I don't know. But it came true.
It might be your fault. I think you changed me because I didn't have half the gray hair I had.
I'm sure. But we're so excited to have you. And Tom, do you have any rollouts? What's coming up? Any programs? Anything?
More Market on the Move every second Saturday. I have the Market on the Move. I did the neighborhood, the Amfine Neighborhood Park outreach the other day, and we were able to. Just hand out like jackets and sweats to homeless. Just a real wonderful thing. We do that every third Wednesday.
How many people are coming out? Just curious.
To help me?
To take the resources on.
To take the resources? There was at least three dozen.
Three dozen?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was at least three dozen that came through, and there were a lot of homeless.
You need more volunteers?
Oh, absolutely. Always need volunteers.
Plug it in while you got the mic.
1 p.m. third Wednesday, Amfine Neighborhood Park, okay?
Okay, all right, so let's get Tom some volunteers. You're not doing anything. You say you want to make a difference. Here it is. Chief, what you got going on? Any programs coming up? Any police something?
Public Safety Partnership, I really want to celebrate that. So we were one of six cities selected because of our narcotics and issues and gun crime. So, you know, at the face value, you're thinking, man, that's not good that we were selected for that. But it's good because we recognize as a city, as a policing organization, we need help. And part of that comes through the federal government. So really, the part of the federal government, the Department of Justice, that rolls out consent decrees, which is where, you know, police departments are taken over by the federal government. It's the other side of the office who really, departments who have really worked hard to roll out evidence-based and led strategies and have some of these issues that are coming in. So at first, it's just the award of the support. But with that will come some additional grant fund opportunities like, you know, everybody's home budget. You know, my budget doesn't cover all the things that I need. So whenever we have access to federal grants and funds and program support, it's really critical. So that's going to help us focus on gun crime specifically. I want to see those numbers drastically reduced. We increased our gun crime by 25%, even though our violent crime was down nearly 5% last year. It's predominantly impacting young men of color. So we're going to keep talking about that on different shows, as I think you and I were just discussing. We need to do this far more frequently so your listenership can be part of the solution.
We got just a few more seconds.
Okay, so yeah, so just lot, you know, there's we got to do this more.
Yeah.
And so get to know your police department. If you don't know your division leader, reach out to us. We'll connect them up with you, but appreciate you listening today.
So we're going to be bringing the chief back in April. We said every other month we're going to get an update report and just keep us going and keep the community policing and building those relationships. And we don't just want our chief to come in and try to be in crisis mode. We want our chief to come in and just be able to have a proactive strategy. Listen, we are just about out of time. We want to thank you. Thank the chief. Thank Rick, the public information officer, coming and being our special guest. Listen, come and meet us every Saturday. We're here at 7:30. If you don't have a church to go to, meet me at the Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church on Sunday at 10 a.m. We are there giving God the praise. So thank you for tuning in and being with us, and see you next Saturday at 7:30. Take care.